It's your Handy Ham World Weekly e-letter for the week of Wednesday, the 7th of May, 2014. I'm Pat Tice, WA0TDA, reporting from the Courage Kenny Rehabilitation Institute's Handy Ham program. This podcast is a free weekly news and information update from Courage Kenny Handy Ham program. Our contact information is at the end, or simply email handyham@couragecenter.org for changes in subscriptions or to comment. You can listen to this news online. In a few minutes, I'll give you a new email address that will be effective on May 9th, 2014. Welcome to Handy Ham World. Suddenly, my ham radio station is out of date. How did that happen? Oh, you know, that station you put together was state-of-the-art, or at least pretty darn close to it. Now? Oh, man, it's yesterday's mashed potatoes. Pictured is a page from a 1960s vintage Allied radio summer catalog showing several night kit radios, the Ocean Hopper, the Space Spanner, the Ranger 3 Superhet, and Ranger Clock Radio, with analog clock, of course. HF, high-frequency short-wave radio, once ruled the roost when it came to global communications. Long-distance telephone calls cost a small fortune, after all, and HF was available to anyone who could afford a radio that had the short-wave bands on it. You could tune around and hear stations from around the globe, which was impressive in the era before communication satellites and smartphones. Those of you who have lived through those years in the middle of the 20th century will know what I'm talking about. Yes, it was almost magical to pull a signal from Europe or Asia out of the air. It was a time when the world was a much bigger place, and things were much farther away, given the limited communications and the economics of high-speed transportation back then. Amateur radio was a gathering spot for scientists, engineers, and other technology-minded folks. It was truly a high-tech testbed for worldwide communications. What happened? Well, technology evolved and grew to allow low-cost worldwide communications. Transportation became relatively cheap and thus mundane. It became so easy to communicate anywhere that worldwide travel and conversation with people on the far side of the globe, well, those things were everyday occurrences. What was once, oh wow, became, so what? Don't think for a minute that you're the only one that is shaking off technology whiplash. Everyone experiences it to some extent because the pace of change is accelerating. And even the coolest dudes will be left wondering how their wearable tech got so out of date. But here's the thing. Amateur radio has change in its DNA. It's about technology, communications technology, and everything related to it, which includes hardware, software, design, construction, experimentation, and deployment of entirely new modes and systems. So think about that, and then think about attending Hamvention this year. It's all about making things, new things. I'll have more about what I found out in a couple of weeks. For Handy Ham World, I'm Pat Tice, WA0TDA, Courage Kenny Handy Ham Coordinator. Speaking of Hamvention, it's May 16th through the 18th, 2014, coming right up. Are you attending the 2014 Hamvention? Well, if so, we would like you to visit us at the Handy Ham booth, which will be at number 330 in the Silver Arena. Because I'll be preparing for Hamvention next week, there will be a short e-letter, if time allows. Now, if there is no e-letter, it's because I just didn't have time to put it together. If you can't make it to Dayton, you might want to tune in the W5KUB Helmet Cam webcast. We have a link to it in your weekly e-letter. Now here's the thing. The 2014 Hamvention is all about makers, the future of ham radio. We'd love to see you, and there is plenty of new stuff for you to learn about, thanks to the makers among us. The May CQ arrives today. My copy of CQ for May 2014 appeared this morning in an email notification. Subscribers can read the issue on the Zinio website, and you can read about the May issue on the CQ website. The links are in your weekly e-letter. You do have to be a CQ subscriber to read it on the Zinio website. The 2014 Radio Camp is Saturday, August 16th through Saturday, August 23rd, 2014. Don't forget that the equipment program will be at Radio Camp. That means that campers will be able to take home equipment that they've requested, provided that the equipment program does have it available. So if you're a camper, please let us know what you need to get on the air. Categories of equipment that can be made available for you to take home from camp are VHF-UHF radios, HF radios, accessories like speakers and tuners, Morse code accessories, and other accessories. Please just let me know what you need. Now, let's take a dip in the pool. Today we're checking out a question about best practices from the extra class question pool. It's question E1 Bravo 01, which asks, which of the following constitutes a spurious emission? Possible choices are A. An amateur station transmission made at random without the proper call sign identification. B. A signal transmitted to prevent its detection by any station other than the intended recipient. C. Any transmitted bogus signal that interferes with another licensed radio station. Or D. An emission outside its necessary bandwidth that can be reduced or eliminated without affecting the information transmitted. And what we're looking for again is which of those constitutes a spurious emission. So what do you think? Well, if you think about it, this question is partly about knowing what is meant by a specific term, the word spurious. It's also about best practices in operating. And these best practices tell us to keep our signals within the allotted band space, to maintain good signal quality, no matter what mode of operation, and to keep all equipment in top operating condition, right? A visit to Wikipedia gives us a simple definition of spurious emission. Quote, a spurious emission is any radio frequency not deliberately created or transmitted, especially in a device which normally does create other frequencies. A harmonic or other signal outside a transmitter's assigned channel would be considered a spurious emission. Unquote. Okay, so we can all agree that we don't want to operate in a manner that interferes with other stations by transmitting outside our intended frequency bandwidth. Modern transceivers are well designed and meet FCC compliance standards. So, what's the problem? Well, there's always another factor in play here. You know who that is. It's the operator. Even a well-designed transmitter can emit spurious signals when it is not operated correctly. Some possible causes of spurious emissions can be overdriving the transmitter with too much audio, so you get overmodulation, overdriving linear amplifiers, the improper use of audio compression, which can result in overdriving, operator modification of circuitry or failure to use low-pass filtering with Class C amplifier circuitry, or perhaps a failure to tune up tube-type amplifiers properly, and a failure to recognize parasitic operation. It may be happening if there is output from an amplifier stage, even if the exciter circuit is off. What to do? If you get reports on the air of problems with your signal, you should take them seriously. Be sure you have the transmitter controls set within a normal range. If you are using aftermarket microphone preamps and other such circuits, turn them off and run some tests with your friends on the air to determine if that is the problem. If you are running a linear amplifier on HF, try a series of tests with and without it. Be sure it is tuned properly. Basically, try the simple stuff first before assuming that there is a problem with your equipment. If you get stuck and can't figure out what's causing these spurious emissions, there are some other resources. Try your local radio club. Many clubs have a MAP, M-A-P, Member Assistance Program, that helps club members solve problems with their stations. Club volunteers can put their collective skills and knowledge to work finding out what's going on. A second resource is the ARRLTIS, Technical Information Service. It is well worth it to be an ARRL member and a member of your local radio club, as I have recommended many, many times in the past. Of course, another obvious resource is the Internet. Internet discussion boards can sometimes be a treasure trove when searched for archived comments on a particular problem. This is often the way to go if you trace the issue to a hardware device, like a particular rig or microphone preamp. Field Day is coming up. Join us in Oak Park Heights, Minnesota. The 2014 Field Day packets and rules are available from ARRL. Visit ARRL.org/field-day. Our affiliated club, Sarah, will be holding Field Day on Saturday, June 28th and Sunday, June 29th, 2014 at Autumn Hills Park in Oak Park Heights, Minnesota. Details and specifics for this year's events are being pulled together. Continue to watch this space for details. The Field Day site is wheelchair accessible, and there is paved on-site accessible parking, and it's right there. You don't have to go a mile to get to the Field Day site. You'll find it to be very convenient. Several radios will feature voice frequency readout. No overnight operation is planned. It's daytime only, and accessible restrooms are on site, and these are real restrooms, brick-and-mortar restrooms, not porta-potties. So it's a very accessible, easy-to-use, easy-to-get-to site, and we do hope you'll join us. Turning to practical radio today, hey, do I really need that spare HF radio? For many of us, it's all about downsizing these days. We are constantly reminded about this when we hear about friends and neighbors who are moving to condos, apartments, assisted living, to another state or city for a new job. Hey, we're a people on the move, and this can make ham radio, especially HF operation, more challenging than ever. That's when you have to consider just how extensive a station you really need to be active in the hobby. Now, here's the thing. You can answer that question, but hey, only you can really answer the question, because only you really know what kind of hamming you want to do. If HF is important to you, then it is not unreasonable to keep a spare radio available in case you have problems with your main transceiver. If you are only on HF occasionally and can do without a radio for a period of time, when it might be at the repair facility, for example, then you can slim down your ham shack. The real problem comes when we simply collect more and more radio gear over the years, thinking that it's good to have a spare station and have all that equipment around, but then we don't really pay attention to all that spare equipment, and it just sits on a shelf in the basement. You know what I mean. My motto is, if you have it, make sure it works. For example, let's say you do have a spare radio. Okay, so is that spare radio ready to pop easily into place as a substitute for your main radio? Or will it be a lot of work? I'll tell you, it's easier if its power cable is already set up with Anderson power poles, so you don't have to fiddle around with the nuts and lug bolts and everything on the power supply. You know how hard that can be. And how about the CMOS battery inside the radio? They do go dead eventually. And it can be a frustrating thing when you think your spare rig is ready to go in place, only to find out that all the memories are deader than a doornail. If you used or even tested that second radio once in a while, you would have caught that problem. Maybe it's a better plan to keep the spare radio connected to the power supply and have it in place, even if you have to switch the antenna from one radio to the other for testing. If you actually use your spare radio on the air every so often, you'll know what its condition is and be aware of any potential problems before they become too serious. I like the idea of a spare 12-volt DC power supply, too. Having a spare rig won't do you any good if the only power supply you have has gone bad. I have my ICOM IC7200, my main rig, connected to one supply, and my ICOM IC706 Mark II G connected to another. I use the 706 mostly for VHF, UHF, FM repeaters, but it can be easily switched to the HF antenna system should the 7200 be out of service for some reason. The nice thing about this arrangement is that it essentially duplicates the HF station capabilities with the exception of the antenna system. And since both rigs and power supplies get used almost every day, hey, I know that they're in good working condition. If you do have to shelve some of your equipment, take the time to do a periodic assessment. You are much more likely to do such assessments if the rig is easy to take off the shelf and connect to the power supply, so mind my advice about those power poles. If you cannot do any assessments and you have not touched a spare radio for a year or more, well, maybe then it's time to cull the herd, so to speak. That radio could be doing someone else some good, so sell it at a ham fest or a club swap meet, on eBay or through consignment. You could also donate it to a new ham who has passed his or her general exam at your local VE session. Just one more thing. If you are comfortable operating a remote base station, you can consider that as a spare radio without any need to keep more than one transceiver of your own. This is practical radio. So have what you need, get rid of what you don't. When downsizing day finally comes for you, you'll be glad you did. Handy ham nets are on the air daily. We all know that summertime is a busy season for everyone, and of course that means our net control volunteers as well. So let's say it's a nice summer day and we can't fill a net control position. Why not feel free to just start a roundtable conversation? It's easy to do. And we're looking for some help with the daily midday sessions and with the Thursday evening technology net session. So if you can help with either of those, please contact our net manager, Matt Arthur, KA0PQW, at his ARRL.net address if you think you might be able to help. PicoNet is an upper Midwest regional HF net on 3.925 MHz Monday through Saturday. It has long, long been associated with Handy Hams and Handy Ham members, so check in if you get a chance. Visit the PicoNet website for more details and net schedules. With summertime absorption starting to become a problem on the 75-meter band, your best bet will be to check in around or shortly after 9 a.m. Central Daylight Time when the net begins. That's before the sun gets too high in the sky and starts messing up the absorption. This net can be heard on the Handy Ham Remote Base HF stations, W0EQO and W0ZSW, and by stations in Minnesota, Southwest Ontario, Southeast Alberta, North and South Dakota, Wisconsin, Northwest Illinois, and Northern Iowa, and maybe part of Nebraska, too, up in the northeast corner. In the winter, when the 75-meter band goes long, well, that's really good because then contacts across the country are possible. That's 75 meters for you. Listen for the Handy Ham Wednesday evening net tonight. This is our VOIP-enabled net. And try to answer the N6NFF trivia question that Doug gives out during the first half hour of the net. Then check in later just to get in the log and say hello if you want. The trivia question answer is usually revealed shortly after the first half hour of the net. So if you feel like you're up for a challenge tonight, see if you can check in and then correctly answer this week's question. We're scheduled to be on the air daily at 1100 USA Central Time plus Wednesday and Thursday evenings at 1900 USA Central Time. A big thank you to all of our net control stations. We do maintain our nets, again these are VOIP nets, at 1100 hours daily relative to Minnesota time. Since the nets do remain true to that Minnesota time, that means the difference during the summer and daylight time and GMT is 5 hours. So GMT is 5 hours ahead of us. And that means that the daily net is on at 1600 hours GMT. The two evening night sessions are at 0000 GMT Thursday and Friday, and here in Minnesota that translates to 7 p.m. I don't know if that's really night. I guess that's early evening now that the sun's up quite a long time during the day. Anyway, 7 p.m. Wednesday and Thursday, and 0:00 GMT Thursday and Friday. The official and most current net news may be found at handyham.org/nets. Here in the Twin Cities, you'll hear us on the 145.45 MHz Minnetonka repeater system, thanks to Don Enzo BVE for the use of his repeater. Email changes are coming this week. This week! We're making some spring changes in our email, changing to our spring wardrobe and email, so to speak. Beginning May 9th, our old email addresses that end in either courage.org or couragecenter.org are going bye-bye. Our new addresses are going to be effective beginning on May 9th. That's this Friday, because it's May 7th already. So the new addresses are nancy.maydell, that's N-A-N-C-Y, dot M-E-Y-D-E-L-L, at alina.com, and Patrick, P-A-T-R-I-C-K, dot Tice, at alina.com, A-L-L-I-N-A.com. Now, please do not use these new addresses until Friday, May 9th. We're not sure if mail sent to them before that will actually get to us, and it may certainly be delayed, even if it does get to us. Also, a reminder that I'll be taking Fridays off for a while. Our office will be closed on Fridays. Our usual hours are 7 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. Central Daylight Time, 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Outside those hours, you may email us or leave a voice message. There has been a high volume of telephone traffic lately, and my policy is to handle calls from HandyHam members first, then take care of things like technical calls from non-members as time allows. During Hamvention week, I'll be out of the office most of the time, as you might expect, since conditions in the arena at Dayton are really not good for cell phone service, I will not be answering calls at all there. The best way to reach me will be via email. Nancy will be in our office during her usual hours next week, which will be Hamvention week. Of course, Hamvention is toward the end of the week next week, so that'll be Friday, Saturday, Sunday, but I will be out of the office Thursday as well, and probably most of Wednesday. Turning to the digests and lectures, we do have some new things there, the QCWA digest for May and the doctor column from QST, as well as some other QST and CQ offerings are now available. Our thanks to Jim Perry, KJ3P, Bob Zeta, N1, BLF, and Ken Padgett, W9MJY, who do the volunteer digest recording. So thank you guys for that. Turning to the remote base news, we find that HandyHam remote base internet station W0ZSW is online for your use 24/7. W0EQO has an internet firewall issue and thus is out of service right now. Just a reminder, if you want to log in securely, which you certainly should do if you're using any kind of a public network on the laptop or portable device or whatever you're using there to log into the HandyHam website, you can find a secure, blind-friendly HandyHam website login at https://handyham.org/user-main-content, or link to that from your weekly e-letter. Be sure to send Nancy your changes of address, phone number changes, or email address changes so that we can continue to stay in touch with you. You may either email Nancy at hamradio@couragecenter.org or call her at 612-775-2291. If you do need to use the toll-free number, call 1-866-426-3442. Remember that our email addresses change on May 9th, 2014, so that address I just gave you will not be good beginning on Friday, May 9th. You can contact me, HandyHam Program Coordinator, at 612-775-2290. That's Pat Tice, WA0TDA, 612-775-2290. If you do get the voicemail, please leave a brief message and tell me the best time to call you back. Mondays through Thursdays are the best time to contact us, and mornings are usually the best. That's it for this week. 73 from all of us at the Courage Kenny Handy Hams. For Handy Ham World, this is Pat Tice, WA0TDA. And remember that our email addresses change on May 9th, 2014. 73, and I hope to hear you on the air soon.